Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Holmes of ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death. On the Blog Talk Radio Network. Blog Talk Radio. On the Trusted God Radio Network. And we open with a prayer, dear Lord. We thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. Thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. All blessings that have come will come. All unmerited. We thank you, dear Lord. As the man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. You're God all by yourself. We thank you for this day. As kids, we say, dear Lord, lay me down to sleep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. We bless our families here on the panel, our families here in the USA, my family and friends in Brazil. And more importantly, Lord, we just thank you. And remember to keep in the Sabbath holy. And we ask these blessings, all the blessings, in the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Let's just go ahead real quickly and hit the opening and tell you what we plan to talk about on this segment of Sports in Depth. And there you go, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. The Knicks, they win again. And Carmelo Anthony, 36 points, is the Knicks 125-120 winners. Carmelo is leading the NBA in scoring, as I would go sub would say. The Mets and the Yankees, the baseball teams, last week, it was a Sunday that nobody kind of won. And a duel of Cy Young Award winners, with Jason Vandermeer just getting the biggest contract ever given a pitcher. C.C. Sabathia and the Yankees, without Derek Jeter, without Curtis Granderson, without A-Rod, beat the Detroit Tigers 7-0. The Mets down by 3, came back to pull out in the bottom ninth, a 4-3 win over the Marlins. And both baseball teams win. What's happening in the world of sports? Louisville is in the Final Four, winning for where? As he's sitting on the bench rooting his team on, they're getting a shot at the championship, NCAA. And a hats off to Coach Rick Pitino. What's happening in the world of sports? Boxing! 3 weeks in a row! out here in the capital city of the observe, Murder K would say, this Saturday, there Rodriguez in a fight at the Second Avenue. Music Hall is in the Temple of Boxing in Don King, the Temple of Boxing all over America. And we've got a fight with main events. We'll be losing the fight in this. Back at Clouds at the new Madison Square Garden, it's Zab Judah against Danny Garcia. Fight is going back in February. So 3 straight weeks here in New York City. Fight in the Big Apple. The names up on the board, Jack Roosevelt Robinson. April 15, 1947. He broke the color line. The news you got about Jackie Robinson. We also looked at some names up there. Phil Jackson was part of the contingency that celebrated the 40-year anniversary of the Knicks winning their last NBA World Championship. Jackie Robinson, Phil Jackson, the Ghost, Guerrero, get ready for Floyd Pretty Boy Mayweather. And time to get ready for sports today. Live Talk Radio. Just about ready now. Dr. Danny and the Posse, right here. Join us. Trust the God, sports in depth. And we got a lot of NFL stuff to talk about, too, at Cincinnati Sea Wings, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411. You can catch him on the blog, too, baby. Doc Stanley Sports in Depth, blogspot.com.br. Mr. NFL 411, he's there. And also on the blog, The Boxing Way with Lady A. There's no more to say. The Boxing Way with Lady A. And the crew should be pulling in here. We should be looking for Jamel Cosell Smith. Will be on location. So he'll be not with us. So what we'll do, we're going to kind of do that for him today. I'll probably have to do it. So, as he would say, help me say, the Sports in Depth Nation is here. I'm Doc Stanley. I'm here. The panel is here. And we're all here on the Trust in God Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. Doc, take it away. We miss Rudy. He's on vacation, but hey, this is where he's supposed to be. Right here, Clock Talk Radio. Trust in God Radio Network. Sports in Depth. It's a Sunday night. And if you got us on your radio, then you've got it right. Doc Stanley, Clock Talk Radio, Trust in God Radio Network. Cincinnati Seaman, a.k.a. Mr. NFL. The Cisco Kid should be also riding up pretty soon.
I'm right here. I'm right here.
I see him coming over the blade, blazing the trail, baby. Have the Cisco Kid is rolling up.
I'm right here.
There he is. And there's Puncher right behind him. And as Ward would say, the Cisco Kid, they say he was a friend of mine. He is a friend of mine. And we're lucky he's a friend right here, the Cisco Kid. Cincinnati C, he should be joining us soon. And looking for the Hoopster.
Cincinnati C has landed. Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
What up, Sin?
Cisco Kid, and now, you know, Cisco rides up and Sea Wings is flying in Miami and Sky King, pulling in, and they keep on coming. We're looking for Harold, Double Barrel, Harold Weston to join the Piazzati. There he is, baby, live and kicking, Double Barrel Harold, Double Barrel Harold, hook to the head, shot to the body. You know, as Cosell would say, tell him, Cincinnati, see, let's kick it off with NFL here. A lot of things happening. Have the Giants settled this thing with Victor Cruz yet? What's going on with that?
Not yet. It seems like both sides have dug their heels in. You might not see Victor Cruz sign a contract with the team until the end of the season. I mean, they're looking to make him the highest paid slot slot receiver between $7 and $9 million a year, but he's looking for more upwards of, you know, with his numbers and everything, upwards of about $10 and $12 million a year. So, that has been on the back.
What's your thought? They're talking 7 to 9. So let's get 9. He's talking 10 to 12. This is his second year. What's your thoughts here? Is this something that his agent is doing? I mean, your thoughts. I mean, is he right? I mean, you want to get as much as you possibly can. I mean, we would have thought the Giants would have been a little more receptive to getting this thing done. But on the other hand, it's not chicken feet. But, you know, give us a, you know, you're the man. You know the ins and outs. You're the expert here. We're leaning on you. What's the story here? What's your thoughts? What goes through that intellectual mind about football through your head on this Cruz and Giants situation?
I mean, I think that you will have they will come to terms. I mean, it's just the business of football. I mean, especially in this year with the kooky free agency, with all these players being moved around, and it's just the nature of the business. I mean, I think you'll see a deal get done. He'll get upwards of between $8 and $10 million.
It seems that to a certain degree, and it's an amazing thing here as what outstanding guy he's the second greatest athlete to come out of UMass right now. It seems that nobody else is even. It's like the whole NFL has said, you know what? He's going to deal with the Giants and the Giants only. Nobody else seems to be even interested or giving him a nibble.
I mean, I think that's just the. That's just the nature of the business. I mean, CBS Sports reporting that Victor Cruz partnered with Jay-Z. You know, he wants at least $10 million a year. I mean, you're always going to have a player. It's just like in any other negotiation, business, real estate, any other sports. You're going to have the person, the buyer, who's the team, put out one what they think is a fair share, and always they're going to go with the best deal for the organization. You're going to go with the player who's trying to make as much money as they can in this non-guaranteed football. Mm-hmm. You know, football is such a brutal sport, and most
NFL,
of the money,
not for your classic line, NFL, not for long.
I mean, every player is a potential career ender. I mean, look at the defensive player in Rutgers didn't even make it to the pros. Took that hit. He's paralyzed from the neck down. So, I mean, that's you look at Dennis Byrd, thank God that he was able to walk again. But you look at these
Stingley. I mean, you always think about Stingley. I mean, his injury happened during the preseason game.
Yeah, and not to jump off the subject there, there are reports that that they're coming out with a movie about it slipped me there, but they're coming
about
out with an
about Jack Tatum and Stingley.
No, not Jack Tatum. Slipped my mind here.
What position? Defensive player? Offensive player?
Quarterback.
The black African American or white quarterback?
A white quarterback.
We're not talking about Johnny Unitas, are we? We're not going that far back.
Yeah, is it Johnny Unitas? I have to get back to you on that.
Number 19, Baltimore Colts, Johnny U. Sid Lockman. Y.A. Tittle. Sam Snead.
No,
I mean, Unitas has always been seen as the prototype, the number one, you know, like you talk about center fielders, Willie May, you talk about quarterbacks, Johnny Unitas, running backs at the halfback spot, Gale Sayers, of course, all time, Jim Brown at fullback and running back, so, you know, Rice now, when you talk about ends, so maybe it's Johnny Unitas, who passed away now about 5-6 years ago. I remember that when Peyton Manning came to the Colts, they said, hey, you'll never be number 19, as Peyton was number 18, one digit Lobo tried, the great Johnny Unitas. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio. And the trusting guard.
Joe Flacco's going to play him, Johnny Unitas. And Flacco's grandson is saying that's an embarrassing choice being reported by USA Today.
Although he feels that's embarrassing that his dad is playing Johnny Unitas?
Yeah, that Johnny Unitas is going to be portrayed by Joe Flacco in a movie, upcoming movie. That's from Unitas' grandson.
I would think somewhere along the line you wouldn't mind having a guy that is a football player, you know, play the part. I mean, that's the thing they always cry about. You get these guys who play the parts who are really not athletes themselves. And now, I mean, it's not so much who plays the part as the part is portrayed and brings into realm the sort of feeling that, you know, you see Johnny Unitas. I remember the great thing about Jamie Foxx when he played Ray Charles. Had you never seen Ray Charles, Jamie Foxx was Ray Charles. You know, for a person who had never seen him, what a great, great job he did. Where we got you now, there's some talk, and it's up on your blog there, of the possibility of some gay football players coming. In fact, there's sort of been a situation where they were going to all get together and come out in unison, Cincinnati State, NFL 411.
being floated around the football community that there are four gay National Football League players that are being, you know, the talk is that they're going to come out the closet, and there's some other talk that they're not going to come out all at once. So this is a developing story. It's, at this point, it's just rumors. There's nothing to solidify that talk, and I'll have to keep our listeners and our blog and the panel here updated as developments come forth. But that's what the rumor is. They haven't mentioned what team, who they are, but it's being reported that four gay football players are supposed to come out sometime, either before training camp or sometime before the season starts. But as we know, how rumors float around and how things, you know, just take off, we'll have to see, and I'll keep the listeners in the panel updated. One quick thing, the Jets, the more they try to stay under the radar at some point, the more they stay above the radar. Rich Amini of ESPN NewYork.com is reporting that Darrelle Revis, in order to collect his $3 million incentives tacked on within his four-year, $46 million contract, he must attend the conditioning program, which starts the 15th, a week from this Monday, in order to receive the $1 million workout bonus, which he has to participate in 80% of the workouts, even if they're non-mandatory. He gets a $1 million roster bonus, which kicked in March 17th, but he has to, which will be paid later, and a $1 million training camp bonus that he has to show up and participate as well. This is something that he agreed to in his contract, more or less where the Jets kind of had leverage on him because they gave up the chance to place a franchise tag upon him at the expiration of this contract. So you will see a lot going on between now.
Okay, hold on, hold on. Now explain that. Explain that one more time, the franchise tag, what it means, and then how this played up. I mean, why would they not have done that to be in this position now?
Well, when he sat out, he had the upper hand because you had a lot of guys coming into the Jets. They were new, or they were new to the system. So when he did sit out, and he was the best player, still the best defensive player on the Jets, and still the best defensive player up until the injury. We don't know how he's going to come back, but it's being reported that he is rehabbing ahead of schedule. But to kind of keep that defensive roster together, being that he is the shutdown cornerback, which is the best cornerback in the NFL, the Jets gave up the possibility or the power to place the franchise tag on the player. Now, franchise tag of is when a team designates a player as a franchise player. It gives himself a certain amount of control over the future of the player, you know, of his contracts and different things like that. They could only give that to one player, the franchise tag per year. So it's usually placed on the highest quality player, that being, obviously, it's not it's not Sanchez with the Buck fumble, something I've never seen in the history of watching the NFL games. But they gave it up. I don't know why. But when they do put the franchise tag on them, they can manipulate the salary of a player. That's why a lot of players don't like the franchise tag, because they kind of own you. It's like joining the military. You sign that contract, they have you at least for that amount of time that you sign that contract. And
in other words, it's a lot like the reserve clause in baseball.
Yeah.
That used to be.
Yeah, I mean, they could move the salaries, you know, they could renegotiate the salaries. They have a lot of say-so, more control over that player. So they gave that up. But I think to have some checks and balances, they came up with these $3 million incentive bonuses where they could use in the future against Revis at this point. So we shall see. Also, the NFL draft is a little over a week away. The first round was the Jets pick at number 9. And also, the Giants have been relatively quiet at this point. They picked number 19.
How did that happen? Giants 19. Well, I guess that's, a lot of it has to do because the Giants have been more successful than the Jets, that they're at the 19th slot. All trades and stuff paved the way for them to be.
Percentage wins and things like that. But also, Nolan Narak has been back in the news. He's NFL's pro weekly draft analyst, and he's been known to, it seems like, seems to be highly critical of African-American quarterbacks. You can remember back a couple of years back when he was very critical of Cam Newton. Now he has a lot to say about Geno Smith, that he's not, you know, he doesn't seem to command respect from his players.
Yeah, I'm always amazed how these guys who see the game from afar have all this inside information, and you got to wonder, if he has this sort of mindset against African-American athletes, they're definitely not the ones talking to him. So it's just, I just go to basketball games, guys would say, well, Larry Bird's the best all-around playing basketball. You know, you see Bird come here, look, 3 or 4 times a year, okay? You see him once a year, but who else have you seen to sit here and come up with the deduction that he's the best all-around player in basketball? And you know, the thing with these writers, too, is like I always said about police officers. You know, people have to understand that, you know, when a guy puts a uniform on, it's a uniform he has on. It doesn't change his mindset. It doesn't change how he feels about pork chops. It doesn't feel how he feels about people. It doesn't feel how he feels about ice cream. I mean, it's as Howard Westaway said, and touching, but the reality of these people is that they take their prejudice. And you just look at, I was thinking about the Cisco kid. You thought about George Dixon. And I was just sitting there in the bed, so thinking about, here's the guy who brought about, and all of the nuances and the intricate things of the speech science, so many things invented by African-Americans that not only enhanced the sport and their abilities, but was defensive mechanism. Harold Weston told me the story about, you know, Jack Johnson was allowed to box against white fighters with the understanding, you can't hit back. He said, hey, you can box them, but you can't hit back. Dixon learned how to get off the ropes because, they, you know, the crowd. I mean, it's better if we talked about the his trainer. It's better if we talked about the guy's coach. But the crowd was picking it. It just said to gentlemen, give me a second. Don't nobody move. But I've got to do this real quickly because I got to have him while he is here and see what he had. Ladies and gentlemen, don't nobody move. But yeah. Down low with a turnaround jumper on the top of the key with a three. He's got rebound. He can flip it down and catch you on the break. They just simply break you down one on one. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only basketball out. Prince of course, the Hooster Lewis, the Hart, Hooster.
Hey.
Carmelo Anthony, 36 points. Knicks have won the most games consecutively ever. Anthony's leading the league in scoring. Is he going to do what only Bernard King's ever done as New York Knicks? What's he going to do?
He got a chance. I think he got a chance to do it.
Okay, no, but hey,
we want to congratulate. We also want to congratulate the Clippers too for their 50 wins in their first division in franchise history of 43 years.
The
1972-73 when they moved to LA from Buffalo.
Buffalo Braves, the Buffalo Braves, baby, who had the Rookie of the Year and NBA scoring champion, Bob McAdoo. I wish I was there last night. Friday, since Knicks was there, had Ernie DiGregorio, who came out of and became the Rookie of the Year. Okay, Cincinnati, see, you had something to ask the Hooster?
Yeah, I was asking the Hooster, and I watched the game today with L.A. Do you think Kobe is done? Do you see him playing another 2 years? I mean,
he's got it. You see what he did out there today? Yeah, of course.
Well, no, what did he do out there today?
They're good. They're good, but he couldn't handle the Clippers by himself, man. Them Clippers were on a mission. And that's the first time they ever swept them, too, Doc, also.
Wow. So you heard it here first.
In history.
It's right
first
now.
First time the Clippers ever swept the Lakers.
Well, I mean, you look at the Lakers teams in the past. I mean, who was going to sweep them? I mean, if you look at the horde of teams they had it before Kobe's crew here, we had Kobe with Shaq and Rick Fox. And then you had to go back to the Magic Johnson days, Magic, Worthy, Kareem, Byron Scott, Slick, Nixon. So sweeping them, back in those days, you had to worry about not getting swept by them, all the sweeping them. So they got to take their hat off to the Clippers. I think the Clippers, and you know what, I'm going to tell you something. We kind of questioned when my buddy there, Grant Hill, decided to go to the Clippers and not the Lakers. And right now we can see that he knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. Because he said, Dad, why wouldn't he go to the Lakers? Because the Lakers, they were stacked. They had Kobe. World Peace was coming back. Then Howard showed up, And then, they got a hold of the, I can't even think of his name. The guard that, who's the guard down there, Hoopsa? That they got the old guard. Come on, the guard from Phoenix.
Oh, you talking Grant Hill?
Not Grant Hill. The guard they got from Phoenix. He won the NBA championship, the two-year NBA MVP award back-to-back. I think they maybe won, but definitely not two. It's amazing how the name was chasing me. Hoops, the guard for the Lakers that they got in the trade. He's playing back. He's a starting guard. The Canadian guy.
Nash.
Nash. Yeah. Nash. Yeah. Nash. Yeah. Nash. I started to say Nance. I know it was a Nance. But Nash, you know, they got Nance. They got.
Well,
Kobe,
he would have played. It would have made no difference. The Clippers was this out there on a mission.
No question about it. I mean, what he brings to the Clippers is a lot more of adding to the overall power of that team than what he would have come. I mean, with the Lakers right now. They still have a shot for the playoffs, right, Houston?
No, they look good right now. But I'm going to tell you like this. It's the Lakers tied with the Jazz. The Jazz will get it because they have the series over the Lakers. So the Lakers got to win these games. They can't be a tie or else they're done.
NBA final, not the NBA, the final four. Louisville is part of that final four. You like
Well, I'm picking Louisville. You know that. That's my school there. I love Louisville.
Well,
Michigan is a good team. Michigan is good now.
Michigan's good. It's the first time Michigan's got back to the Final Four since they
also
had the
Fab
Five.
Also, we got to congratulate the women. Got to congratulate the women, too. First time since Connecticut, two colleges are in the championship.
Yeah.
So we got to congratulate the Louisville Cardinal females.
Oh, yeah.
And also, it looked like Notre Dame is not winning. That's not looking good right now. Look like Connecticut. Your friend Gino might be going back to the championship.
Really?
Yeah. They're kicking Notre Dame's butt so far. They put a bottle on Diggins. Every time she get the ball, they make her give it up. They make sure they did their homework this time.
Who might be
Connecticut. Two Big East schools in the championship, Doc.
Yeah, yeah. One time the Big East was the best. When they first did the Big East, it was just coming along. And then look at the Big East. They had the best teams in college basketball. I mean, you had Georgetown was over there. At that time, you had St. John's and Georgetown playing for no one. Georgetown was in the final 3 years in a row. 3 years in a row. I mean, Michael hit that big shot to beat them. And then when they lost to Villanova.
That was ACC, though. Ain't that North Carolina with ACC? That was ACC, ain't it?
No, but I'm saying Georgetown was in the final
the Big East,
3 years in a row.
Yeah.
As a Big East team. I mean, they
especially
they,
when
Jordan
was playing for them.
Huh?
When Patrick Ewing was playing for them, the Big East was the – they were the
that was the powerhouse.
I mean,
I can say Georgetown alone was in the final 3 years in a row. They lost Jordan with the great shot. Okay, and you look at the guys they had on the floor against Patrick Ewing. They had Worthy on the floor. They had Perkins on the floor. And they had Jordan, coached by one of the great coaches of all time. And say the same thing we said of John Thompson. Then next year, Georgetown comes out and wins it. And then the third year, Villanova played just about a perfect game.
Yeah,
I mean,
60% shooting, man.
Yeah, didn't miss a shot.
He tore them up.
And all both losses were just
just missed losses. I mean, Georgetown very well could have won three in a row. I mean, you had St. John's come out of Georgetown, and then Connecticut became a powerhouse. I mean, just a great, great division. You just hate to see that happen, you know, the Big East. But the Big East was the Big East. Like, New York is the in the East and the number one city in the world
and they're going to lose. Yeah, they lost everything, man. They ain't going to be the same now. No more at the Garden.
Well, I tell you,
I got more info for you.
Okay.
Got some more info. I know on the NBA scout, Monty Blake has passed away. He's been an NBA scout for 35 years. He died at 86 years old.
Oh, okay. Was he sick, or was it cancer, or just old age?
Yeah, he was old age.
Okay.
He also was a director and scout. He also scouted, talk about Michael, you know, he did all scouting all the greats, like Michael Jordan, all the guys that came out the NBA. He passed away. Mm-hmm. Listen, that dollars to the Blake family. Yeah, he was a scout, NBA scout. And then Tom Bullwick also died too, Doc. He was 67 years old. Tom Bullwick is pretty good. Your man Chet Walker and Bob Love.
He died
at 67 years old.
67?
He was drafted fourth round pick in 1968, averaged 7 points a game, 9 points of rebounds a game.
Yeah, that tells you something. 68, 69, 67, 78. Now, he was 67. Now, he illness too, his situation?
Yes.
He was 67
years old.
He was the guy in the hole until then, after that, Clifford Ray came over and took over for him. Yeah, he was the guy before Clifford. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. We got to do a little break here. Then we got, don't forget the Cisco Curtis here, Harold Double Harold. A couple things to tell you, though. And I told the First Lady of New York City Cable Television and his lovely Crystal Hart, send me some information that I've got to shoot on to you and let you know that on the, so we got it coming up on the 12th, the FDNY's Bravest boxing team will go against the London Metro Police team, and it's a rematch from the Transatlantic Championships from last year. There will be 10 three-round fights, and the organization here, they donate monies from these affairs they've got over $200,000 to different charities, and they get $5,000 to the rundown. Was that the Rundown Homes, which is Rundown Homes for Heroes, which is a organization that funds severely wounded vets and their families. So they gave them $200,000 to a horde of other charities, and they just made a $5,000 donation. It's a 7 p.m. About this the 12th at the Resorts World Casino in Queens, right here in Queens, out there in Queens. It's going to be New York's Bravest against the London Metro Police team. And any information you need to know, just go online, www.fdnyboxing.eventsbrite.com. Once again, it's this Friday, the 12th, the Transatlantic Championships, a rematch of last year's fights off between the London Metro Police team and the New York's Bravest. 10 three-round fights, as we told you, that the monies is donated to $5,000 will go to the Burn Down Homes for Heroes, which funds severely wounded veterans and their families. They get collected over $200,000 just from these bouts to different charities. Fight to kick off at 7 o'clock at the Resorts World Casino out there in Queens, 7 p.m. Any information you need, just gave it to you. You can go online, www.fdnybrite.com. Any other questions you have, you can hit us right here. Don't forget, it's 9 o'clock on Tuesdays, the number one female sportscaster on cable television, this lovely Crystal Hart. She'll give you letters 111. And with that, we're going to come on back here. Don't let
Doc, I got that score.
Give it to us.
We're going to congratulate your man, Gino. He's going back to the championship. He blew out Notre Dame 83-65.
Wow.
Sweet. Notre Dame beat him 3 times in the regular season. The 4th time was not a charm. So we're going to congratulate the Connecticut Huskies, the females.
The 3rd time was a charm. So Connecticut was charmed enough. They came on and won the game.
That's right. And they blew them out. They put a weapon on them. They put defense. They played. They were relentless out there tonight. We'll congratulate the Connecticut female Huskies. So we'll see Monday night. We play against Louisville females. So like I was saying, the two male and females in the championships. So we want to congratulate both of Louisville, Kentucky, as the home of Float Like a Butterfly, Sting Like a Bee.
Muhammad Ali. So we have the men's team in the final and the ladies' team.
From women,
Louisville.
Women.
Connecticut.
Yep.
Now they're going to play against Connecticut, and the men are going to go against Michigan.
Yep.
And that's the first time Michigan's been there since the days of the Fab Five. Weber,
right.
Rose, and the rest of the guys. No, I couldn't think of the name of the other three guys on that. I remember Rose was...
We got Jimmy King.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy King and Ray. And Ray.
Ray, okay.
And Juwan Howard and Jalen Rose.
You know what? I can forget Juwan. You know what? Because three of those guys made the NBA. Right. Juwan Howard made the NBA. We know Weber made the NBA, and Rose made the NBA. Yeah, three. That's three of the Fab Five. Five freshmen on the floor. I know you're talking about when Joe was a freshman one time. Guys said they were playing against Jordan, and Jordan injured himself by hitting his head on the backboard. Cass was like, whoa. Guys did what? Yeah, timeout. Timeout for the Tar Heels, Michael Jordan. Timeout injury, head injury. Do a hitting head on the backboard. Cass be like, whoa, that. You know, hey, coach, you know, I think my ankle's bothering me. You know, I don't think I want to play. Doc Stanley, Clock Talk Radio. I'm Justin Garrett. Oops, sir, any last details? I mean,
I just want to congratulate the Clippers again, their first division in franchise history of 43 years.
Does this do anything to unseat the MVP award to LeBron James? I mean, can we look at Chris Paul as what he's done?
He's been nominated for LeBron James, but also you got Carmelo Anthony now. He's been tearing him up now, so it's going to be a tough MVP. So LeBron looks like it's not going to be. He got to earn it now. We got a lot of guys who deserve MVP.
Well, the thing is,
tell you, they call a lot of bad fouls against the Knicks, and also Carmelo Anthony now to be the leading scorer, and before to be the second leading scorer, he was the most undercalled, superstar
in the
NBA who. Was fouls? I mean, blatant fouls was committed against him, and they seem to be on the ball against him.
He's been going to the hoop. He be pulling up for jump shots. He ain't been going to the hoop. He been hot outside, so he don't need to go to the hoop. His jumper is deadly, man.
Yeah, but what he's saying is when he does have the clock. I remember that great. I was seeing a film, and it was like when they were doing the Olympic team, and Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and. Michael Jordan, and they were taking the picture. Jordan was in front of Michael and Larry, and somehow Larry reached over and took Michael. Imagine told Larry, Larry, you can't touch Michael, you know. And that seemed to be the status quo in the league, you know. I remember that thought about the team the Friday. Me and Frazier were talking one time. I remember they were playing the Lakers, and Jerry West went down the middle, and nobody touched him, but the referees called the whistle, and the closest guy to him was Phil Jackson, so Phil got the foul. Oops, so can you hang with us a while? You got to go back in studio.
Go ahead. There's another. Yeah, okay. I still hang.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to. Harold, you told me something quite disturbing, and as we move toward the. And let's hit the ring a little bit. In fact, you know what we're going to do, if it's so true, let me do this real quickly. And here it is. One. Two. Bell three times. You told me, Al, that you Carl the Truth Williams has passed.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh. Cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
How old was Carl? About what? 40 maybe? 50?
Yeah, late 40s.
It's funny because it gives me a good segue right into the Trust in God, Sports and Death, Entertainment, Artifact Hall of Fame. I'm looking in the studio here, where I should add a picture, autograph by Carl, and right next to the picture is a picture autograph by Alexis Aguayo, and, you know, those two guys passed away, and then there's one Harold's man, Vito Antifermo, and the picture of Aguayo is him fighting Kevin Rooney, and the thing that makes this picture so iconic was that when they interviewed Rooney, they asked him about, I think, the knockdown or the punch that he took in the third round, and Rooney's response was, what third round? Carl's one of the guys that you helped nurture, too, didn't you, Harold?
Yeah, we Nudged him all the way to the championship.
With Larry Bone. Yeah, that's satisfied. What happened in that fight, Harold? Cisco, you saw that fight too. With the dovetail.
I'm up.
You okay? Sunday was the first.
Hello?
Yeah, you heard me?
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know.
Oh, no, I thought that was Cisco. And Cisco, you said, how you usually listen to this? It was thought that Carl let the title get away or Carl got a bad decision, Harold. You still kick us and it would go to Cisco.
They did get a bad decision. I mean, you know how they play those politics games at that time. I mean, they still do. But, basically, he got robbed. They didn't expect Carl Wynn to put up such a great fight like he did and really, beat Larry. One thing I told Carl, and that's what we worked up to the day before, is that basically, if you outpunch Larry with a jab, beat Larry with the jab, you got Larry home. Because Carl was just as big as Larry, and one thing about it,
yeah.
Carl was faster than Larry. And now, if you look at that fight, and really take off the sound. Just look at the fight and just score the fight.
How? Back in those absolutely.
Yeah,
you heard what Harold said. And I've said this a zillion times. When you watch a fight, take the sound off. Don't let her left. That left hand stung him. Or Merchant. Oh, what a good right. Roy Jones Jr. He's doubling to the jet. Hey, take the sound off and judge the fight yourself. Go ahead, Harold.
Yeah.
Well, and Carl did a great job. Everybody puts it on the last round that Larry won. I mean, they said, well, Larry stole the fight in the last. Boom. I mean, they fought 15 rounds. In 14 rounds, you mean Larry was neck and neck with Carl. Was like a joke. You know what I'm saying? But I think Carl did he's got great honors at that. But the bad part about it. Nobody really knows who he was, and that's the sad part. He was a good guy and a good fighter. It's just that after Larry Holmes fight, just took everything out of him, and he never was the same after that.
Wow. You said psychologically,
yeah.
He never was the same. That is one fight
that I would like to see again. I being that I was a huge Larry Holmes fan, that fight I saw it the same way. I saw Carl pretty much winning that fight. I mean, he definitely outboxed Larry. But, Larry, of course, Larry, at that particular time, it was a matter of time before somebody was going to beat him anyway, because not too long after that, he lost to Spinks,
yeah.
So
and if you look back at that, Cisco, I think they would have rather him had lost to a heavyweight than to lose to Spinks, who was coming up as a light heavyweight, because as what the significance of that was, it stopped him from the 49-0, and it made Michael Spinks the first ever light heavyweight to win heavyweight championship of the world. And I think if they had it to do all over again, to do the right thing is always, Dr. King says, always the right time to do the right thing. But they would have rather him to lose to what we would say in a legitimate heavyweight.
But even if they wanted to get rid of Larry in the worst way. I mean, Larry wasn't articulate. Larry wasn't bringing, he wasn't exciting in the heavyweight division. He wasn't an Ali. He dominated for a certain amount of years, was 7 years or something like that. But he wasn't that guy that was going to bring boxing to resurgence. And even if he would have won the fight against Spinks that first time, he still would have lost that fight. I mean, he got it against Carl, but. But how many of those close fights were you going to get at that particular time? And like I said, because Larry wasn't this, icon, he was, people knew he was heavyweight champion, but not he wasn't. No, I mean, even when he fought, what did he fight that I was trying to get my hands on? Anyway, I'll go back to that some other time. But anyway, like I said, Larry was just not a big name, and being that he was heavyweight champion for so long,
That's what's going through the boxing world today. You just don't have those well-recognized boxers, especially in the heavyweight division. The Klitschko brothers, they fight overseas. They don't even fight over here.
Oh, right. No, that's true.
Such a dying.
Think about Larry, because Larry, you know, and you brought some points to Chris Cisco that, you know, he didn't have that charisma. I mean, nobody's going to have the Ollie charisma anyway. But, you know, there are guys who Ray, Leonard Duran, Ollie. But the thing about Larry, too, because Larry kept talking about being in the shadow of Ollie, and you talk about how he wasn't that personality, and nobody could follow Ollie.
Think about this.
Hold on, let's go. No, what I'm thinking about is, and what you said, when Weaver fought Larry at the Garden, Duran was the semi-main event. Well, after Duran beat Carlos Palomino, half the people left the Garden. I mean, they were there to see Duran. Half the people left the Garden when you still had the heavyweight champion of the world to fight. Cisco, you got it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even when he fought Jerry Cooney, I mean, come on. I mean, even Jerry Cooney was considered a favorite over him. People were you know, people wanted to see Larry lose. For a long time, people wanted to see Larry lose. Not that Larry was a bad person, but if you watch him, he wasn't, like I said, he was a journeyman. I mean, not a journeyman, but he was.
Hold on, Cisco, are you ready for this? Maybe, and Harry, you can be maybe a glorified sparring partner.
No. Larry was the truth. Larry was definitely, to me, one of the best heavyweights of all time, I think. You know what I mean? Of course, he's not an all-time great like Ali, but he's up there. I think he would have beaten George Foreman, you know what I mean, if they would have fought in their primes.
Harold?
Only because...
Larry beat Foreman if they're both 21, 23 years old?
Yeah, he'll beat George Foreman.
George would kill him.
He'll beat George Foreman.
I'm going to show you why he can't beat him, okay? One thing, Larry can't take a punch. And the other thing, George is not as slow as you think he is.
You know, people forget, and Angelo said that, the reason why Ali went to the rope-a-dope in Zaire, because George had cut the ring off so deftly. Thank you, Harold.
Yeah. And the bottom line, Larry did not take the best punch at the heavyweight. He did get dropped. And believe me, if George dropped you, you ain't going to get back up. And so, basically, he would knock Larry out. And one thing about Big George, he was devastating with his jab. He had a darn good jab. So,
I disagree.
You know why I say that?
Because Ali proved that when you can't hit a fighter square, George Foreman had nothing else. He wasn't that skillful of a heavyweight. And one thing that Larry Holmes had, he had an educated left jab. He would have jabbed him to death.
See, you know what I mean?
You're
misquoting the situation. I said Larry Holmes didn't have no chin, and you're going to match Larry Holmes.
I don't think so either. Because I mean, the only fighter to knock him out was Mike Tyson, and look, Mike Tyson was a big puncher. But he got right back up.
Ernie Shavers was a big puncher.
But here's the point I was making. He got up, but he doesn't get up from George Foreman.
George Foreman, didn't he get dropped by what's his name?
The issue here is not George getting dropped. It's the issue of George hitting Larry.
The point is that Larry had more tools in his backpack than George Foreman had. I mean, George Foreman, you see the way he hit the heavy bag. You see the way he fought. That's why Ali was able to figure him out, because all he had was those round punches. He wasn't a technical fighter. He became actually a better fighter when he came back, you know?
No, George Foreman, when he hit you, if he caught you with the one
true.
Two,
that's true.
I mean,
Let me say something to you.
You just made a statement. You said George Foreman was a technical fighter, right?
No, I didn't say that. I said George Foreman wasn't a technical fighter. He became more of a technical fighter when he came back.
He wasn't a technical fighter, right? Okay?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. What is Vito Anfermo then?
What?
Vito
Anfermo. What kind of fighter is he?
He wasn't much of a technical fighter himself, yeah.
But
he was middleweight champ of the world.
Of course, of course.
Okay, my point to you is that all fighters are not technical fighters. Everybody's got their own style.
Hey, I know that. But my thing with George was, he was a brutal puncher. But you saw in fights where he lost, you know what I mean? When he lost to, he almost got beat one by Ron Lau when he slugged it out with him, which was a good fight. You understand? He lost to Jimmy Young, which caused him to retire. I mean, for that particular moment, if you look at Larry Holmes was definitely had more tools on in his arsenal than Larry. If Larry would hit him, I mean, if George would hit him, yeah, he probably would have knocked him out. But we saw Larry hit the canvas, get back up, and fight on and win fights. You know what I mean? That's what makes a fighter. And I don't think he had
the issue here is we're going back to square one. Larry was a better skilled boxer than George. But the issue here, if George hit him, Larry's gone.
Yeah,
now you mentioned the Ron Lau fight. It showed that George could get up. I mean, George got up
three times.
I just think what Harold's saying here is what everybody's concurred, because that was the thing when Ali trained to fight George, Ernie Wheelwright, who was Ali's sparring partner, they sat down to talk about it. Wheelwright said, "Champ, understand something. This guy can kill you. This guy's power is so devastating that he can kill you simply being himself. Just trying to ground out the shortstop, he hit the ball over the 450 sign." I think we know what Harold was saying here, going to both sides of the ledge, understanding what you're saying, that Larry could have outboxed him, but you're talking about a 15-round fight. And what the record has showed is that Larry always got hit. And if George hit Larry, Larry would no longer have been the heavyweight champion.
My thing about Ali beating George Foreman, honestly, if you look at George at that particular moment, when he threw punches, when he knocked out Joe Frazier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Frazier was short, right? And he likes to bob and weave. He likes to weave a lot, you know, get under the punches. He couldn't get under George Foreman's punches because George Foreman throws punches very low and wide. When he did that against Ali, threw a lot of those wide punches, he hit Ali's body most of the time. That's why he wasn't catching Ali with nothing to the head, because he was used to throwing those kind of punches, and Ali kind of knew that. He never threw a jab. He never threw a straight right hand. He never did none of that. You know what I mean? All he did was throw those wide, winging punches to Ali's body. That's pretty much what he did, because that's the way – I mean, when he knocked out Kenny Norton, he did the same thing. He was throwing those wide punches, catching Kenny Norton, moving backwards. You know what I mean? And knocks him out. George Foreman was pretty much right one-dimensional fighter at that particular time.
He's saying he's not the fighter that jump around. He's more like a Bernard Hopkins. He's going to stick in there. He's not going to move around.
Hopkins, here's the bottom line. I mean, heavyweights are hitters.
Why did Ali call him the mummy?
Yeah, but he was a mummy. We're talking about Ali. But the bottom line is, you know,
was a plotty fighter that threw round punches, and he was used to knocking fighters out. You understand?
And what we're saying is had he hit Larry Holmes, Larry Holmes would be one of those guys you'd have knocked out.
I don't think so. Larry was only knocked out one time. That was by Mike Tyson, and he was already 2 years out of the game. He was already pretty much out of boxing himself. It's no question.
But at their best, at 23, 24 years old, if George had hit Ali, he'd have knocked Ali out. He never hit him.
He definitely would have. If he had half the skills that Ali had, he probably would knock Ali out. But
take a punch. Y'all guys are misquoting.
Now, Ali could take a punch.
Hold on.
The problem.
Punch. All right. Yeah. Larry Holmes could not take a hell of a punch.
Okay, now we got two things here. Larry's inability to take a punch.
I guess, you know, that's where we have these debates. You know what I mean? Let me tell you something. Everybody could go down. You know, Ali went down, he got back up. Larry Holmes went down, he got back up. He got hit by Ernie Shavers, man, a huge puncher, man. And he went down, got right back up, and won the fight. So, I mean, You want to say he got a weak chin? I don't think.
Not to take anything away from Larry. I mean, you look at the fight when they fought when he fought Trevor Burbick when Larry was still a champion, and that was a brutal fight. Larry did very well. I mean, hit him hard, hit him often. But
Larry Holmes is one of the most underrated heavyweight champions of all.
I'm gonna tell you something right now, Cisco. You and Harold have yourself the blame for this, that all of a sudden now we've got Cincinnati Sea Wings, a boxing connoisseur. You know, it used to be he would just keep his mouth closed, give us football scores. Now you got him jumping into boxing stuff. You know what I mean? So you guys got yourself the blame. What he learned from y'all, you got yourself the blame for him, because now Cincinnati, you know,
we follow all
sports
in this program. We follow all sports here, Doc.
go ahead,
we follow all sports on this show.
And what we're going to do real quick, give you the latest sports updates, too. The Yankees won today in a battle of Cy Young Award winners. CeCe Sabathia beat Jason Verlander, who became the highest-paid pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball, at least for right-handers, that's for sure. In fact, he faced Bill Hand. Bill Hand was the highest-paid right-hander until that. 7-0 the Yankees won. They beat the Detroit Tigers. Prince Fielder's the team. That's surprising to hear about that story about him and his dad, man. I had known that they had some problems. It's on the blog, Doc Stanley Sports and Death blogspot.com.br, where Cecil and his son Prince, they kind of don't get along. The Mets, trailing 3-0, came back and won 4-3. But the big story is Carmelo Anthony leads the NBA in scoring, and the Knicks, again, the hottest team in pro basketball, after they have now won 12 straight games, which breaks the franchise record, 125-120 winners tonight. And with that, they are now, Houston, did that clinch the division, or now they're just one game away from winning the division? Am I correct?
That's correct.
One game away from winning the division. But the LA Clippers,
and that'd be to 99-2000. They won the division since that year.
Wow.
But you haven't heard too much about the Nets. What do you see the Nets? I mean, do you see them getting past the first round, or No matter who they play. But
Is it be over? They're about to play Chicago. That's going to be tough.
You know what I like about Chicago, Hoopster, is that Rose has just taken his time to mend, and this team is playing so well without him. And you know,
we mean talking about five guys are hurt. They got like five guys hurt. You kidding me?
Yeah.
Tom Thibodeau is a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
You got to give him some credit.
That's the point. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what you bring here, sports in depth. Nobody's talking about Hoopster. Kid, can you talk about some more what a great job he's done with the injuries to that team? I mean, everybody talks about Rose, but he's had other people hurt there, Hoopster.
Well, let me tell you something. Tom Thibodeau, who everybody forgot, he used to be a Knicks assistant coach, and he teaches defense. And that game against the Heat, don't let LeBron dunk. You grab him. You do something out there. The Bulls plays defense. So when the Knicks play him again, that's gonna be another test for the Knicks when they play the Bulls. Tom Thibodeau is a defensive coach. So when you play the Bulls, they're going to be in your face. They're going to be in your grill all day, all night. That's why I wouldn't want to play Chicago, man. I just need picks to get my shot off.
And remember, they're probably one of the best defensive teams against
Yes, they are.
People.
Yes, they are. They showed it against the Heat. Oh, yeah. And Hamilton's out. Noah's out. And Rose is out. Bryanotti's out. Unbelievable. You got to give Tom Thibodeau much credit. The Bulls are something else. And the Nets might have to play them. If the season was over, that the Nets would be facing was the Bulls. And the Knicks would play the Celtics if the season was over. So it's going to be some playoffs.
You
got to watch out for Indiana, too. You got to watch out for Indiana, too. They're playing great ball, too. A lot of teams out there playing great. Brooklyn, got to give Brooklyn credit. You got to give P.J. Commissimo some credit, too. So, hey, it's going to be a hell of a playoffs. That's why I can't wait.
Everybody's talking about the Knicks, Hoopster. Everybody's talking about the Knicks. Can the Nets really go far? You talked about if they beat the Bulls or they didn't get the Bulls, can they go deep into the playoffs?
Sure.
Or
yes. The Nets are good team. Yeah.
Well, now what was it that made them? This team, they started the season off exceptionally well, and then all of a sudden, slam, bam, this happened. I mean, they stopped playing for the previous coach and
yes, yes, that's correct. Yep, you're right. Yep. And then Donnie Williams got in shape. His ankle's better. You see, he's jumping and dunking
well,
now.
Now, how much? How much has that been a big factor? The fact that he wasn't healthy when the other coach was there, and he has gotten healthy. Now, that has to be a big factor in
big
him
factor.
Playing better too, right?
That's correct. And Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Lopez and Joe Johnson, yeah, that's correct.
No, Lopez is a guy, I mean, we're not being facetious because there's Carmelo Anthony, there's Chris Paul, of course there's LeBron James, even Dwayne Wade. But, you know, there's a guy that has to really get a vote or two as MVP. He's been an unsung hero throughout the league, integral part of the turnabout and the outstanding play of the Nets. I mean, he has to get a vote or two. As MVP
oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, he made the All-Star game, so you got to give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Lopez is good. Glad the Nets kept him to get out of Howard. Kept him.
Okay, do you see Miami getting back to the finals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So now.
Well, it's going to be tough now. It's going to be tough.
Really?
The Knicks are sending out messages to everybody. When they beat Oklahoma City, that was a big message.
Really?
Everybody thought that the Knicks was not going to win that game. And when Stephen A. Smith, your good friend, said the Knicks will definitely lose. I wonder what he got to say. I hope he's listening.
Hey, you know what?
I hope he's listening.
Hey, you know what? Skip will take him for.
Oh, Skip, he said the Knicks will lose. I wonder what he had to say. I know he's probably shocked like I am.
He told me a fascinating story last time we were together. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted Guard Radio Network. They're all here. Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., the Hoopster, Lewis Hoopster Hart, Cincinnati Sea Wings, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 401, and, of course, riding in with Puncho. He told me a story about addiction, and I was talking to a guy yesterday, the other day, at the Whole Foods Market. He was getting some brown sugar, and I said, you know, is brown sugar, that really so much superior to white sugar? He says, oh, yeah, it's like night and day. And Stephen A., we were talking at a Giant game, and he was talking about addiction. He was talking about how they had some rats who were on cocaine. And they said they started giving the rats white sugar. The rats gave up the cocaine for the white sugar, just the addiction. You know, the little things that we look at that we realize how paramount they can be from both a positive and a negative standpoint of view, but it's just, you know, it's just funny how you talk about so many different things at a sporting event. I'll never forget the marvelous Marvin Hagler press conference and the Roberto Duran fight, which Duran, had that been a 12-round fight, he'd beat Marvin, but he was learning, but Marvin came back. And I remember sitting across from the iconic, the legendary Art Rush Jr., and always equally iconic, Howie Evans, greatest sports writer, the dean of sports writers of our generation and one of the greatest in African-American media. And there was a seat empty next to Art. Me and Howie were sitting together, and this gentleman, Art said something to the guy, and the guy sat down. And somehow, you know, just show how things were, we inadvertently got around to the conversation about Sam Cooke. And Arthur George said how it was a shame that Sam Cooke got killed. And this guy said, bullshit. And you're like, what? He said, come on. He said, and think about this, Howie, because, you know, you're from that era. He said, no. What black woman in America didn't know Sam Cooke? And then, you know, he said, come on. He said, you know, he said, this is what he said now. He said, it was a hit. Sam was messing with Ann Margaret, told to stop, didn't stop, boom, it got popped. And he's like, wow. I mean, and this year is at, you know, at a boxing press conference that you're talking about Sam Cooke. We were at a football game. You know, you just never know the intertwining of both sports and entertainment, but it's just, you know, interesting story. If, you know, if not nothing else, you know what I mean, truth or not, but it's just a major story. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. We'll be back in a minute. I got to give another plug, but I got to let the Cisco kid, Pancho, Cisco, tell Pancho to come back with the wine. Pancho, quit playing. Come back with the wine, Pancho. We'll be back in a minute. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. One more time, big happenings this Friday. The Bravest. Oh yeah, the Bravest. And we're going to have some fights out in Queens. FDNY, Bravest boxing team will go against the London Metro Price team, police team. They fought last year in the Transatlantic Championship. This will be a rematch. It will be 10 three-round fights right out there in Queens. people, the Resort World Casino in Queens. Fight start at 7 o'clock. And donations will be given to different charities that cost over $200,000. And $5,000 of that went to the Rundown Homes for Heroes, which is donations to severely wounded veterans and their family. That's this Friday at 7 o'clock at the Resorts World and Casino in Queens. The FDNY Bravest boxing team against the London Metro Police Bay boxing team. And that's www.fdnyboxing.eventbrite.com. And we thank the First Lady of cable television, sports-wise, the lovest and prettiest, Crystal Hart. Get to Crystal. She's on at 9 on 86. And leads now to segue into boxing. You know, Harold and Frisco, we've got three Saturdays in a row with his fights. Donair this Saturday from Radio City Music Hall against Rigadillo. Then we come back. I heard that Cunningham is fighting on the 20th. And then we're back.
Tyson Fury.
Huh?
Cunningham versus Tyson Fury.
Is that a cruiserweight title fight, Frisco?
No, that's a heavyweight title fight.
Really?
That's not a title fight. I mean, that's a heavyweight fight.
Yeah, heavyweight. The main event is doing that. Top Rank is doing the one this week, and then we go to Golden Boy and at the bar.
Yeah, I want to ask him about. Can I ask a question? Harold, number question about that?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think about the Hoyas company leaving HBO?
I guess what I heard is that they don't want to do business with them like they were doing before, giving them, you know, mediocre fights. They want to put real fights. You got to understand, HBO's got a new guy that's leading the way now and there. He came from Showtime, but now he's at HBO. And so now he wants to put, you know, good fights on. He just don't want to put guys that's just going to have, a guy going to beat up. He wants competitive matches, and that's what he's looking at.
Okay. You know what I read? You know what I read? That Golden Boy's former lawyer is in charge of Showtime Sports out in, you know,
yeah.
So they got pretty much pull
okay.
with Showtime,
all
and
right.
that's part of the reason why they jumped ship.
Yeah.
You know?
All right.
You know, my thing is, I think the whole thing is it's really a joke, but basically, I mean, you know, one, it's like Floyd Mayweather going from Showtime over to from HBO over to Showtime.
Another thing about the Floyd Mayweather contract that they got with Showtime, I heard it wasn't a 6-fight deal. It was a 1-fight deal. I also heard that the reason why HBO reneged on because they actually offered the same contract to HBO, the same price contract that Showtime was willing to pay to get Floyd Mayweather, and HBO turned it down because of their history with Roy Jones. They had the same kind of contract with Roy Jones, and Roy Jones, you know, he was fighting sanitation workers, teachers, you know, school bus drivers, you know, I mean, you know what he was doing.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah, he made that what, it was a 6-fight deal or 8-fight deal with HBO.
I don't remember how many fights it was with Roy, but Roy had
a 6-fight deal with Showtime.
Roy was fighting pretty much anybody.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, they said 6, but I heard Leonard Ellerbe was the one that pretty much made that statement, and everybody kind of ran with it. But I heard it was a 1-fight deal. So I don't
know.
Yeah, I heard it was a 1-fight deal. Actually, Jim Lampley spoke about that.
I had the article here the other day, and it's sort of been the way it came down. It works out very well for Mayweather. I heard it was a 6-fight.
But did you see the list of fighters that Floyd had on there?
No. I'm sorry.
Oh my God! It was pretty much nobody. I mean, I don't even think Canelo. I think Canelo Alvarez was maybe last on the list. I'm not sure. He had Danny Garcia. He had names there that you'd be like, what?
Garcia's on that list.
Danny Garcia's on that list. He had a few other names on that list. Yeah, he had the names already.
How soon can we get you back in the gym, baby? God, dog, Danny got sick.
You know, the thing about these guys, and that's what makes it a whole joke. I mean, you know, all they going by is records. And my thing, you know me, Mel, I go by guys' style, and he really is very hungry. You know,
Harold, I don't care if he's green, white, blue, or yellow. Can he fight? Do you hear me, Harold?
him. I think Floyd Mayweather getting all these accolades, talking about he's the greatest fighter we have in boxing today, and he says it himself, you know, that he runs his own game and he runs boxing or whatever. I think it's killing the sport even more. You know what I mean? Because the fact of the matter is, there's guys out there. I'll tell you this much: if Floyd Mayweather wants to prove himself in history as one of the greatest, he'll go up and fight Sergio Martinez and shut everybody up. But that's something he
doesn't do.
Cisco,
Howard saying, don't get carried away.
Right, forget about it.
I'm just stating the fact. I mean, the fact is, he's pretty much milking the sport as much as he can before he leaves the game. That's pretty much what he's doing.
Well.
He's fighting nobodies. He's fighting fights that he can win. I mean, you beat Berto, and you get a fight with Floyd. Shit, I want to fight with Berto. You know what I mean? I mean, that's pretty much what's going on. Victor Ortiz beat Berto. He got the fight with Floyd. Guerrero just beat Berto. He got the fight with Floyd. It's like, what's going on here? You beat Berto, and that's who you get, Floyd Mayweather? I mean, Floyd Mayweather doesn't even want to fight Canelo Alvarez, which is one of the biggest fights that he can only make in the game right now. You know? I mean, Floyd is not going to go up and fight Sergio Martinez. I mean, so what, you know, what is he doing, you know?
He's doing what you're saying. He's milking the sport as much as he can without fighting anybody. And that's the sorriness of the sport. Because if I was the network, I would say, well, look here, you got to fight so-and-so. If you don't fight him, you can't come in.
Hey, but how can the network say to that when they don't know what the hell they're doing? No, here were some people.
I don't know if you guys ever heard that little argument that Floyd had with a rapper guy named R.A. the Rugged Man, where he kind of went in on Floyd, and Floyd got upset. He said, you know, he said, fight fighters, and we'll call you the best. And I mean, this guy pretty much dug it into Floyd, and Floyd really got upset, was cursing at the guy. It was funny as hell, man. I mean, if you ever watched it. If you ever heard it, it's the funniest. I mean, I've never seen anybody get at Floyd the way this guy did. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, with Floyd. Floyd, you know, if he knew he was the best, he wouldn't get mad at nobody. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't
exactly.
Of course.
Right, gotta be professional, right?
Yeah, you'd be very professional about it. But when you know you're fighting turkeys and guys that don't mean nothing, and you're trying to put yourself with the elite, with the Sugar Ray Leonard, with the Sugar Ray Robinson. With the, you know, Muhammad Ali and all that,
Durant,
put you into that elite
Burns.
Group.
Well, I mean, listen, it,
I mean, I give Oscar more props, which was also guys were getting at him,
guys were getting at him
because they were saying he was fighting nobodies, and you know, he went up and he fought everybody. He fought Trinidad, he fought Mosley, he fought Bernard Hopkins at 160. You know,
he lost all those fights.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
he lost them fights, but at least he took the challenges with Floyd.
Yeah, he took the chance.
Floyd wouldn't even do
exactly.
that. Floyd didn't
even. Yeah, I see. No, it was the big thing that we were laughing about the other day. When Rooney, and he's not here with us, he's on location. When Rooney was saying that he thought that Trout was a dangerous fight for Alvarez, and Cisco said, "Well, yeah, it's a dangerous fight, but you know, they've said that he's fought nobody. Now he's fighting somebody of merit, and you're saying." Don't fight him. I mean, what do you want? I mean, do you want the chocolate donut, or do you want the?
I mean, let me tell you something. At the end of the day, of course, this is prize fighting, right? You want to make millions of dollars. You want to make money, of course. But boxing was always based on reputation. You know, Mike Tyson, I'm the baddest man on the planet. You know what I mean? Being the heavyweight champion of the world, or being welterweight champion of the world, being number one is what boxing was all about. Nowadays, it's not about that. Nowadays, it's about fronting like you're the best. Keeping a record that's unscathed and fighting nobodies, and then we get
getting to I'm not even worried about being the champion. I'm just glad to get this title fight for this big money. And if I don't get knocked out, and if I can go to this, I can say, well, I went the distance. There's you guys hit a point that is so true. I mean, the days of yesteryear. When we keep throwing your name in, how as it should be, when guys like you fought, there was a pride. I mean, forget that. Let's just talk about Pepper. Nobody quit, but there's guys who don't even train.
I mean, you got a 10-round fight, and you can't go three rounds, which goes back also to the people in the
Why today? Why do we have more undefeated fighters today than ever in the sport of boxing?
Ever.
That shouldn't be happening. All guys do today is pad their records, and they can do that.
Harold told us last week.
You look at Tavoris Plow. Remember when we met him at the film festival?
Yeah, and I want to thank you so much for that video, too. And you, too, for those pictures, too, Cisco.
Yeah.
You have to look at it. He didn't even have a fight, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, for about a year, at least a year.
Yeah.
As a champion, you won it. That was unheard of during the era.
That's the reason why he lost to a guy like Bernard Hopkins. I mean, this kid pretty much was fighting once a year for quite a while. You know, these guys get shelved all the time because of this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Because they want to, you know, they push fighters who pretty much are more marketable, but you know, they kind of, you know, give them fights that they can win.
Cisco, Harold told us last week, guy said he wanted to be on Harold's card. He'll fly himself down there.
I'm going to tell you something right now.
Just give me a guy I can beat, okay?
Floyd is not the best fighter in boxing today. You know, I don't care what they pay him. Making $83 million, man, come on, man. That's highway robbery. You understand?
$83
billion? $83 million he made the following year. He became the highest paid athlete last year.
How many fights did he pay per view?
You got a kid like Andre Ward. To me, he's the top dude right now. Is Andre Ward?
Andre
Ward has taken the tough challenges. He went through that middleweight tournament and beat everybody.
Yeah.
Took Chad Dawson and knocked him out.
Tight.
You know what I mean? Bernard Hopkins doesn't even want to fight him because I'm pretty sure after he saw him destroy Chad Dawson, forget about it. Come on.
What did you say, Cisco? Beyonce said, you know what? Yeah.
He don't want none of him. He's like, yo, I ain't fighting you. Of course. I'm your big brother. Yeah, you be his big brother now.
Oh, hold on. No. Here's the better one. Bernard said he's going to fight. You know, Harold, it's amazing when guys will do what they're supposed to do when it's advantageous for what they want to do. Now, B-Hop said he's going to fight the IBF mandatory when everybody else wants. And you go back to Leon Spinks, you know. Kenny Norton became heavyweight champion of the world because Leon Spinks would not fight him as the mandatory. Leon said, there's two things here. I took the title from Ali. I'm going to give Ali the title shot back. And two, I'm going to make more money with Ali. So I'm not fighting Kenny Norton. Okay?
Right.
But, you know, in those days, there was a thing where you gave the guy a shot. Now, Kenny became champ because they stripped Leon. But now you're looking at this situation where we've got Andre Ward, who that's the fight that everybody would want to see, but B-Hop is saying he's going to fight the mandatory, which is basically D-U-C-K-I-N-G. He's ducking Andre Ward, point blank.
I got a better one for you. Floyd Mayweather was talking crap about Andre Ward, that he's a gold medalist and nobody knows who he is. He doesn't even make any money. Who the hell do you think he is talking crap about whatever, right? So Andre Ward got pissed off and said, really? He said, you know what? I'll fight you at 160. You understand? I'll fight you at 160. And then he said, then he actually wrote it, which was on his Twitter. He said, I'll fight you at 160, but I know you won't do it. So come on, you know?
But you know what you hear about, and I want to direct this to Harold.
Hold on. Come to me. Let me check it first, and then I'll send it. And hey, you know what? Listen. You know, it was better with Lady A. E2 Sea Wings. My goodness.
Yes, Caesar. We're on a subject of the quality of fighters and these fighters give up. And you know what came to my mind is we talk about the famous fight between Sugar Ray Leonard, the No Mas fight. But we very rarely talk about the fight between Mike Tyson and Galata when he gave up and they started throwing
Galata and Riddick Bowe.
Galata and Tyson. Galata actually quit.
He quit. He started pushing.
I forgot who was his trainer at the time. He got pissed off and was trying to shove his mouthpiece in his mouth. And Gallardo was like, no, I'm done.
Okay. Well, another one. No, then that's three times he quit. Because I remember, you know what I remember about the fight and a great coach, Cincinnati, right here, ladies and gentlemen, the best ever do is my crew. What I remember about the Gallardo and Bo fight, it was a big fight, and they were giving things out to the community. And I remember sitting ringside, and ding, the bell rings, and both guys go to their corner. And I look to the right, and I see the guards escorting this guy up the stairs, and they're going to take him out. You know, and I don't know what the guy did. I just happened to look to the side. And then the melee broke out. And as I focused in the ring, the same guy who I saw the guards walk up the steps, I don't know how he got away, he was in the middle of the ring throwing punches in that big melee between Gallardo and Riddick Bowe. I said, well, how did this guy get away? But the point you're making here, too, Cincinnati C, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411, catch him on the block, ladies and gentlemen. Doc Stanley, sportsintheblogspot.com.br, the latest in the NFL by the only man that can give it to you straight and on the money, Cincinnati C Wings, a.k.a. 411, Mr. 411. And you talk about Gallardo. It seems that, I don't know if we would say back in the day how the Gallardo had Kool-Aid in his blood, but Marion Boykin talked about a guy that when he saw the opportunity and was there, it could a lot be the fact that he just couldn't handle success. What's that great line? You can't handle the truth. And it seems like Gallardo, the guy, Harold, couldn't handle success.
I think Gallardo is the butt of all Polish jokes. You ever heard those Polish jokes, how stupid they can be? I mean, I'm not trying to be saying nothing crazy, but, he, you're winning a fight, and you punch the guy, and it's nuts. I mean, are you kidding me, dude?
And twice.
You know,
more than twice.
He was given several warnings. You know what I mean? The guy goes and does it again. Not only does he do it in that fight, but he does it in both fights.
That's what I'm saying.
But the problem with Gallardo and his problem was with Mike Tyson, too. Fatigue will make a coward out of anybody. And so when them guys got to that fatigue point when they were fighting, they quit. That was an automatic,
and that was
a normal situation.
Yeah.
And this is something, ladies and gentlemen, that Harold Weston has been saying for years. That great line, fatigue will make a coward. And you said this, Harold. Okay, we're here on the Trust and Guard Network. We're going back to when we were on Blake Radio Network. We're going way back to SLFM Radio. So he's been saying this over three networks, and it's one of the classic lines, along with the sad and touching. And, but how with the fatigue factor, if a guy knows he gets fatigued, isn't there something he can do to say, okay, I've got to run an extra half a mile, I've got to jump rope next to him? Can't he do something?
That's the greatness about fatigue. There's nothing you can do. You can run 20,000 miles. Fatigue is going to fall in regardless.
Harold, you said that's the greatness about fatigue?
Control. It's all mental.
Yeah, you know, that is definitely true. Certain people can't fight through that. I mean, there's certain athletes that have a lot of stamina, you know what I mean, to fight. You know, remember, Ali used to fight 15 rounds. But these guys can barely do 12. So, you know, there's a difference when you got guys who physically can do it. Not everybody can do it. You know what I mean?
Everybody can't do it. And no matter what sport you're in, you're going to get tired.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter. It's that certain athletes that can overcome it and keep going, where the other athletes just get quit. They can't take it no more. And mentally, they just say, I quit. And that's mostly everybody, a lot of people in sports. They said they got that third win. You got that special athlete that could get that third win. And then you got the other athlete that can overcome that fatigue in the second.
Harold, you have an athlete who pretty much will pace himself so he won't gas out. You know.
But Harold, who were third win guys?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Robinson, Emil Griffin, Joe Frazier.
Who's that? Joe Frazier?
Whale, right?
Uh-huh.
you got to understand, you had to see these guys and see them in fights as you saw them. And like Ray, when he fought Tom Henry, he was getting the dog beat out of him. He was dead tired.
Yeah,
the
he
man
was,
just got to do it. And he came out there and threw 100-something punches to get Tommy out of there in that 14th round. My point is that takes a hell of a guy that's got his butt beat for the last 14 rounds and come back and knock a guy out.
What about the Randy?
He can never overcome fatigue. And that's
his
downfall.
Harold, was Benitez Duran in that class?
Yeah, Duran, especially Benitez. Benitez, that was...
Oh, Benitez, definitely.
Straight, too. It looked like he didn't even get tired. I mean, you know, he just looked like he just breezed right on through it and everything. You respect a guy like that.
Yo, Doc, mm-hmm. I know you're a big Duran fan, but you know Duran's parents were Mexican. You know that, right?
We learned that right here. In fact, I want to tell everybody, and Harold Weston was another guy, too. His helmets won't let him say it. At the fight on Thursday, his grandson was there, Stacy McKinley, who trained both, as we talk about Duran, he trained Tony Tucker and Tyson, and he had Duran's grandson there. That's a lot with the black hair, and his parents are Mexican, but if I'm correct, he was born in Panama, though, correct?
No, he was born in Panama, but his parents moved there from Mexico.
You know what part of Mexico they moved from?
Oh, I don't know. That I don't know.
Actually,
from what I heard, they're making a movie on Duran. Did anybody get that book? Because I know there's a book that was written
Stone. Where did I put that book? I got that book around here somewhere. You're right. Where's that book? I got that book in my library. My sports in the library. I got to read that. I got to find that book. I'm glad you said that. I put it in my library. I got to read that. Yeah. I remember when they were getting ready to the guys would have called and asked a question. So, now, Duran, when he went, was he like 2-3 years old? Was he a baby when he went to Panama?
Well, yeah, he was born in Panama. From what I know, born in Panama. He wasn't.
We talked about this. Basketball, does that happen to guys in basketball? Guys just, you know, they can't go. It's the fourth quarter. The team's down. But, I mean, I've heard of guys who like, you know, for some reason, they can't get the ball when the game is on the line. But there are guys, does that happen in basketball on the hard court where guys just run out of gas, Hoopsa?
Yes. Yes, it do. Look at Kobe Bryant. Yes.
Yeah. But how much is that fatigue and how much is that is just – choking. Does the fatigue factor be more of a combination of fatigue and choking in basketball as opposed to fighting? Do you think the guys get tired who, you know,
they get tired, man. They just get tired out there.
Really?
They get tired. They get gassed out. Yes.
out. Everybody gets tired in anything. I mean, you can walk down the street and get tired and say, I ain't going to walk no more right now.
You can get tired going up the steps.
Yeah.
You get tired going up the steps, Shucks. Shit, I ain't calling me steps, man. I can't do it.
Man,
you just got to know how to overcome and willing to go on. Some people just don't want to deal with it. Fatigue is fine.
Yeah, you're right.
People make a pout out you. I'm telling you. I don't care who you are. If you can't deal with fatigue, then you ain't in the right ball game. And believe me, it's going to happen.
You're in the wrong sport. You're in the wrong sport.
You get fatigued when working on your job. That's the thing about fatigue.
My goodness. Right. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. It's a Sunday sports wrap that we told you one more time that the Knicks have won again, 12 in a row, longest streak in franchise history. Carmelo Anthony now is the leading scorer in the NBA. One more win, and the Knicks clinch their division, something that hasn't had a long, long time. The Nets have they're in the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. So Kobe Bryant and the Lakers still trying to hold on, but the division has gone to the L.A. Clippers. Paul and company, they're the guys that have been running for the MVP, along with the Thunder, who got rained on by the Knicks today. And the Hoops have said how it just showed what the Knicks have made of. Tyson Chandler's not 100% yet, so, you know, you got to feed him. What chance do we have of the Knicks coach, in your estimation, Hoopster, winning coach of the year? I mean, this team has won 50 games for the first time.
I got him as a coach of the year candidate, most definitely.
Oh, he's a candidate, but
he'll win it? Well, we got a lot of coaches out there, so don't worry.
But Hoops, here was a team that, okay, okay, they can make the playoffs, but they weren't supposed to be as good as they are. I mean, they're going
exactly.
to win the division.
Yeah, they
you know,
fight a lot of people. Yeah, he's a good coach of the year candidate, yes.
He's a candidate, but then again, there's always, it seems to be, the anti-New York sentiment. I remember the year that Jason
yeah.
Kidd should have won it, and they gave it to Duncan. Gave it to Duncan. I mean, I remember Daryl Strawberry should have won MVP in the National League, and they gave it to Kirk Gibson. So it seems that a lot of
yeah.
times there's not only is there anti-New York sentiment, but what was said by Sea Wings earlier about this anti-movement or criticism of black quarterback, I think, you know, it's sad and touching, using your words, Harold, that we can never lose sight of the fact that black always plays a big factor. And wouldn't being a black coach, Carmelo, being a black player from New York, is going to be a detriment. And, you know, it's sad and touching, but I think, you know, you have to. Because what happens is, I remember the year that Ricky Henderson won the MVP, and Cecil Fielder had a great year. And they said, well, you know, they tried to say that Cecil really could have won it or should have won it, was in the running, and maybe Ricky was going to win the batting title until George Brett sat down on it. But anyway, Ricky won the MVP. Now, the next year, Felder had the same type of season. Ricky's team won the division, went to the World Series. My point is that Ricky was on a first-place team. The next year, Felder had the same kind of year. Cal Ripken won MVP. His team was no place in the running for anything, but nobody said what a shame it was that Cal Ripken won it over Cecil Fielder. So, you know, it's a sad and touching situation, but complexion is always a big part of the connection. And that, you know, with the New York, it just said everybody, New York is the place to be. And sometimes, you know, even the New York sports writers, I told you what Don Mattingly and David Getty told me, it's always a negative spin. Carmelo Anthony scored 36 points tonight, but he only, and this is not what he said tonight, but he scored 36 points. Or better still, you know, Francisco went 2-for-4 tonight, two-run home runs, both solo shots, though. The Yankees won 3-0. Who's going to do anything then? The Yankees won 3-0.
And Doc, also about Carmelo Anthony?
Mm.
Also, he's been injured a lot. You can see more lift on his jump shot now. He's
really?
Been hurt a lot. Now you can see
you know,
more lift on his
game.
Ladies
and gentlemen, this is why, you know, my chest beats with pride. When you hear Cisco and Harold and Cincinnati C and Lady A, the Hoopster, Nate B Baseball, Justinio, H. Red Brown, you know, the thing here, we give you more than scores. We give you intellect. We give you education. We give you an in-depth look of the games and the people who play the games like nobody else does, right here on Sports in Depth. But in depth look, okay, at the games and the people who play the game. And you know, because though he's saying the same thing. Magic Johnson, Jalen Rose talked about how they could see the improvement, okay, in
mm-hmm.
Howard, because the fact that now when people come into the basket, he was standing there jumping instead of leaning down and jumping. When he was healthy, he would go down to jump up. But when he wasn't healthy, he just had to jump up, standing up. And his hoops are telling you the difference. And lo and behold, he's been on the scoring tier. He's been on the
and
scoring tier.
And also hitting the boards, too. He grabbed 12 rebounds, too. Everybody don't look at that, neither. He's been hitting the boards,
tremendous
too. He
sport.
Grabbed 12 rebounds in that game.
Mm-mm.
But you know what?
Well, Oklahoma
I think,
City now, that's hard to do. 12 rebounds.
He's in better shape this year than he was in the last couple of years, Carmelo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mike Woodson got some guys in shape. He told me he had to get in shape. He told me he better get in shape this year.
He ain't got no belly like he did before. He's got a little,
exactly.
little belly out.
Yes, he did.
He
did. Yes, he did. Mike Woodson told me he had to get in shape this year.
Yeah, he's got in better shape this year.
I think he,
he cut out the hamburgers. He was eating more Honey Nut Cheerios. That's what
he was.
He's lifting his game. He's shooting.
Also.
He's shooting. He's got a lift in his shot, and he's playing more. He's in better shape. He's running up there. He's really playing great basketball.
Now, let's don't get too excited. We got to wait until he gets to the playoffs and see what happens from there.
Yeah, that's a problem, no doubt about it.
I think that win tonight kind of springboarded and added more credence to how.
No, they'll beat the Wizards, but come to Chicago, that's going to be a tough game.
I mean,
they'll beat the Wizards.
35-3 at home. I mean, the OKC, which I think still OKC is going to have problems. Once they got rid of Harden, that took a lot. I mean, they brought Derek Fisher back for leadership, but losing.
Yeah.
Harden, I think that's going to come back to haunt them in the long scheme of things. That's what I think. And it shows.
Yeah, but they still did good without him.
That could be window dressing, but if they're doing this well, they could have done better with him. And a guy like
exactly.
that, you need when you go into, as Willis Reed said, my good friend, the Captain Man, Cap, we miss you, the second season, because what happens now, you know, we play Harold every night. We're not playing Harold one time in November and one time in February and one time in April. We got to play that team day in and day out, and so we've got to make some adjustments offensively. We got to play defense better. That's the thing that made the old Lakers so great, because the Lakers could play half court or they could run the ball. All they, if Jabbar grabbed the rebound, threw it out to you. If you didn't, they didn't get the break, no problem. They could play half court. So I think the point is so well made and documented by Mr. NFL 411 is that, yeah, and sometimes, you know, that gives you a false sense of security. I remember, I'll never forget Gail Goodrich. I see him now. The Lakers had refused to pay Will Chamberlain. And I asked Gail, and I was stunned that Gail Goodrich would say this about the great Will Chamberlain. And I said, Gail, do the Lakers miss Will Chamberlain? And I thought he was going to say, of course we miss Will Chamberlain. Gail said, no, we don't miss Will Chamberlain. We got Elmore Smith in the league. He's leading the league in block shots. So I go down to the locker room, and I talk to the only man you can utter in the same breath with Walt Frazier's all-around guard. The greatest all-around guard in the history of New York City, second only to Oscar Robertson. Now I'm talking about a guy that can play, who can handle the ball, can shoot the ball, can pass the rebound. And I said, Clyde, I said, Gerald Goodman said that the Lakers don't miss Will Chamberlain. And Clyde, because Clyde's always the last one to the locker room. He's picking out his throw. And I'll never forget what he said. And his shoe turned to crack, said, shit. He said, the reason why Elmore Smith is leading the league in block shots, he said, because everybody's going down the middle. He said, nobody went down the middle on Chamberlain. He said, because besides blocking his shot, he said, Stan, if you hit Chamberlain's body, it was like hitting a concrete slab.
A brick.
So sometimes that's a false sense of security. Yeah. And I think that, they've done well without him. But you know what? Yeah, okay, you may do with the $50, but you could have done a whole lot better with $100. And I think that's the point that is well taken, as Rooney would say here. And once again, ladies, I came with a great slide. Here on Sports in Depth, we give you an in-depth look and perspective at the people who play the games and the games they play. The sports that they play, right here. And once again, the little connotation. Now, earlier, Hoops has said exactly how big a win it was for the Knicks. And here we are later, his sidekick, Mr. 411, validating what that has done psychologically for the Knicks. And also makes the rest of the league say, whoa, hey, wait a minute, man. You know, they better
watch out. Yeah,
they haven't been flaking. You know, and coming to the Garden is a hell of a place to play. Somebody said last night, I was talking to a new friend of mine, he said, you know, how Jordan always played exceptionally well at the Garden, but everybody plays exceptionally
well at the Garden. I love to play the Garden.
The Garden is like a neutral court. Reggie Miller.
Oh, I love to play the Garden. I'll play the Garden. I went berserk out there.
There you go. I mean, everybody wants to play at the Garden.
Okay,
how much does it bother you to hear that fighters – and it's a situation that doesn't happen, that we talked about the other day about that, you know, you being the last class matchmaker there, and the president of the boxing match, Jack Hurst, said, you know, Bobby Goodman was only there as a promoter. I can't use the exact term, but his concern was not that of propelling and pushing the game as it was. He was using it for. I remember you talked about the business that he was doing. He was using it more for business purposes than he was using it for boxing purposes, Hal. How much does that bother you that to know that fighters, I mean, besides not wanting to fight in the Garden has really no place for fighting. No, they don't care about fighting in Madison Square, Hal. How much does that bother you as a guy who has been one of the marquee fighters down at the Garden, but, you know, a legend back in the era of the great fights? How much does it bother you, a guy that the guard meant so much to, and guys, it don't mean nothing to him no more, Harold?
Well, let me put it this way, Doc. We're in a different era. It's like these kids want to listen to 50 Cent, but I want to listen to Luther Vandross, all right? Mm-hmm. So basically,
you got a generation that don't know too much about the Garden because the Garden has not been in that functioning way for boxing, and you don't have the fighters out there that we did back in the day where you enjoyed that moment of going to the Garden and watching these great fights. Okay. So basically, these young people today, wherever they think there's a show or they're trying to build somebody up, then they'll go for it to, you know, go to the Brooklyn. But my point is that the Garden has lost their faith in boxing for a long time. So basically, you know, a lot of things are going to happen when the next 20 years, 30 years. I mean, they're going to say that whoever is the Klitschko brother was better than Muhammad Ali, you know what I mean, and Joe Louis when everybody, all the real people that was in boxing was around. So, you know, it's all going to change.
Well, you know,
that's what's going to happen.
I got something crazy to say. I think some guy, you know, these guys write stuff all the time, man. And this guy, which I thought was, I respected the guy. The guy is going to come out and say that Floyd Mayweather's IQ was greater than Ray Robinson and Ali. Y'all wanted to find this guy and shoot him. I was like, are you kidding me, dude? Are you?
Hold on. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to say goodnight. It's time to go.
Like,
time to go.
You know, when he said that, man, I said, yo, this guy doesn't know. I had no words.
Listen, don't mention his name because it shouldn't be mentioned any place.
No. If I mention his name, honestly, man, they might be a target on his back from a real boxing enthusiast.
Yeah,
hey, you might get
hey,
sued.
Listen,
you might get sued.
Let me know personally, so I will never say nothing to him again. I mean,
Give a letter.
Honestly, somebody should take him to the back and beat the crap out of him. Honestly, but you know. Oh my God! I just couldn't believe it when I read it.
He said,
"Are you
Floyd
kidding
Mayweather
me, dude? Are you really
has a higher IQ than now?" Sugar Ray Robinson was 73-1 before he got his first title shot. 73-1 as an amateur, out of the 85 fights, 69 by knockouts, 40 in the first round. All right, and he's telling that this boy, who to date, I mean. When you look at, okay, if you want to say, I like Floyd. I think he's the best around right now, but he would
not
be.
I don't think he's the best around. Honestly, I don't think he's the best around.
Well, he was. I mean, he may not no longer be, but at one time he was.
Look, you see
a fighter
when he fought Castillo, which is one of his last most challenging fights he had, right? You saw Floyd get hit. You saw Floyd get ruffled. Even in the second fight, it was still a close fight, even though Floyd won that fight. You understand what I'm saying? You haven't seen Floyd in that kind of competitive fight since then. You understand? I mean, he moved up and fought guys like Sean Bay Mitchell, fought guys like Henry Bucellas, fought, you know what I mean? You fought Zab Judah after Zab Judah lost to Baldemir, you know? Come on. I mean, what great fighter has Floyd fought? To merit that, to really merit that. What all-time great fighter has he beaten? Oscar De La Hoya? Come on. There's no name. Look, put it this way. There's no name on Floyd Mayweather's list that can stand next to a Ray Robinson and Ali. You know, even, come on, a Duran, a Sugar Ray Leonard. He has no fighter on his list that he could say that merits him to be an all-time great.
Well, you know, the point, as Rooney would say, well taken, is that there's nobody
the way
that can
Floyd,
say that.
Floyd could have killed all that. Right? He could have fought Cotto when he was undefeated. He could have fought Shane Mosley when he was undefeated. He could have fought Margarito back when Margarito before Plaster of Paris. He could have fought, I mean, honestly, he could still fight Sergio Martinez and try to prove himself. I mean,
well,
Floyd Mayweather has
fucking
dodged more fighters
than Mosley. When Mosley came. Now, was Mosley dealing with top? Now, Mosley's first loss was to who again?
Vernon Forrest.
Right. That's right. Because one time, but we was there at both of the fights. We were there at both of the fights. So I mean, so you don't think Floyd could have beat that Sugar Shane Mosley?
Sugar Shane Mosley at lightweight? Come on,
no, not lightweight.
Dude. Sugar Shane Mosley at lightweight was a beast.
No, I'm talking about when he came up to 147. Yeah, I, you know, Roy Jones Jr. talked about Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust of God Radio. He said that Sugar Shane, as a lightweight, was one of the greatest lightweights of all time. I thought it was Stacey McKinley the other day, and I asked him, well, we were talking about the Pernell Whitaker.
He had a combination of speed and power, and almost all his fights. I think two of his fights went decisions when he was a lightweight.
Lightweight, yeah. He was a great lightweight, and one of the greats. I mean, you got to put him there.
He was fast. He threw punches in. I mean, he was just an animal at lightweight. You know what I mean? And it would be interesting to see Floyd and him at that particular time. Not when he fought him, but at that particular time, it would have been interesting to see those two.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt when Floyd fought him, he was done. But yeah, those fights, that's a good fight. Like Stacey McKinley told me the other day that Duran would have beat any lightweight that ever lived. He said it doesn't matter who they were, that Duran would have beat any lightweight that ever lived. And
that's one's opinion, but probably, you know, you can't argue that.
And as a welterweight, I remember Art Rush Jr. told me that the best he ever saw Ray Robinson was he was a pencil thin welterweight. August 24th.
Well, he was a welterweight. I mean, he moved up just to get to get title fights.
I saw some film as welterweight, man. He was hitting guys, man. Dropping like flies, man, like flies. And he said this night.
You know what's crazy about Ray Robinson is there's no fight footage of Ray Robinson in his prime. There's no fight footage. All the fight footage you see is past his prime.
That's staggering. And you look at him past his prime. It's like I told people the other day. I mean, you look at Ali be all the great heavyweights of his era past his prime.
The fact of the matter is, when you start calling these guys the greatest of war or whatever, you got to look at their resumes, man. I mean, Ali's resume dwarfs any of these fighters today. You understand what I'm saying? When these guys are
Cisco,
talking about
Cisco,
greatest,
we, Cisco, calm down, would you, Cisco? We calm down. Hey, let's just, he's talking to y'all because we know this. Tell him, Cisco. Tell him. I mean,
all you got to do is match. Every boxer has a resume, right? They have
Joe Frazier lost four fights to only two guys, okay? And he lost them to other champions, George Foreman and Muhammad Ali. And he lost twice, actually. He only lost twice.
But he gave Ali his first loss. So, come on.
Huh?
He
gave Ali his first loss. But, I mean, you look at the resume of guy. Benitez, the champion, at 17 years old. When Duran fought Ray Lynn the first time, he was 72-1. The numbers are staggering. Benitez, we talk about the youngest champion. You know,
you just got to see the guys they fought, the guys they beat. You understand what I'm saying? Guys that when you look at Floyd's record, you know, you look at Floyd's record, you say, okay, who has Floyd beaten to be called to be merited as an all time?
You see,
great?
And that's the problem that you bring up to. You know, it's all right, stay under the radar, but now, you know, hold up, son. You know, you're mentioning names of people that you shouldn't be uttered in the same breath. But you see, the point that Harold just talked about 4 minutes and 38 seconds ago was that these people don't know. You know, so I mean, all they know.
Don't.
I mean, I remember something that Whitney Houston said, which it's apropos in the sense of a third situation. But she said that, you know, she said, I never lived in a world without Muhammad Ali. And some of these people, you know, they've never lived in a world where they saw Ali or Oscar Robertson or Jackie Robinson. See, the thing I say about basketball, I have no problem with you saying Michael Jeffrey Jordan is the greatest player ever. But, you know, they act like that Michael Jordan's the only guy that ever played basketball. I mean, you never heard of Wilt Chamberlain, you never heard of Bob. But, you know, Bob Pettit averaged 26 points and 16 rebounds a game. Elgin Baylor, 27 points, 13 rebounds a game. When Oscar Robertson retired from basketball after coming out of college, averaging 33 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists a game from the forward spot, a three-time college player of the year, okay, the all-time leading scorer in the history of basketball, when Oscar Robertson retired from basketball, he was the second highest scorer in the history of the game, 25.7 points a game, and hadn't averaged 20 points his last 3 years' career, and yet he was number one in assists.
points to what Oscar Robertson had the most free throws because he got fouled. I mean, Bill Russell, they talk about championship. They won the title 8 years in a row. Jerry West, Earl Monroe, Walt Frazier. Mike, I love you, baby, but they act like that nobody else played.
You know
the
game. What's crazy? You know what's crazy, man? That steroids have made the game better. You know, you see these guys doing some super stuff now, right? But in boxing, it's not doing jack shit to you know, excuse my French, but it's not doing anything for the sport of boxing. Fighters are not getting better, even though they're getting caught, they're getting busted on testosterone and on HGH and on
Jesse,
like, what the hell, you know? I mean, I don't understand it, man.
Gentlemen, we've got
about you look at the fighter Lewis, Tony Lewis, who beat Ruiz for the belt. I remember being at that fight at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And they took the belt back from him a couple of days later because of the steroids.
Oh, yeah, Andrew Jones.
It's like Chavez. It's like Chavez Jr. Same thing.
Yeah. Chavez ain't too bad because it wasn't drugs. It was a little cheaper. He had a little smoke in his system, so we can go with that. You know,
wait a second. They fined him $900,000 for marijuana and the game with 9 month suspension. But steroids, you get 3 months off.
Hey, listen, they said, you know what? Hey, in other words, quit smoking and start taking other stuff.
I'm telling you. Don't get high on
that. The thing about that, he could have smoked that 4, 5, 6 months ago. You know what I mean? I mean, it's how sad and touchy. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. The gang is all here. The Cisco Kid. Gentlemen, real quickly, let's look at it. Let's give you a quick pick. We'll start with Harold first. We have Danair. No, we'll start Cisco first. Cisco, the fight this Saturday. Danair and Rigondeaux. How am I saying his name wrong?
Rigondeaux.
Okay.
Who
do you like there? Why?
That's actually not this weekend. It's the following weekend.
You're
right. It is this weekend. My bad.
Yeah. Who do you like there?
True. That's, you know, I favor Danair, but I smell something brewing here, man. I don't know what's going on.
Really?
I want to see how the Cuban deals with Danair. You know, the Cuban did, I think he was knocked down in his last fight. It's an interesting fight. I mean, you know, I see it as a pick and fight, but I give Danair the edge. But I don't know, man. I mean, this fight is going to prove, guys, if the Cuban is really just a glorified amateur or he's a real seasoned pro. You know what I mean?
Harold?
No, I like Danair, too. I mean, I think that, you know, the Cuban being knocked out in his last fight, you know, that's...
No, he got knocked down. He got knocked down.
He won the fight. You know, Danair is a real devastating puncher, you know. It's, mm-hmm. I like Danair. I think he's real... If he keeps improving, he's going to be a fighter to watch. I really think.
Yeah, well, he won fight a year, 4 fights later. Hoopsa, who you like, the Rigondeaux or Danair?
No, Danair. Say by knockout.
Cincinnati C, Mr. NFL in the know. Who you like?
Well, statistically speaking, Danair has the best record. He seems to have a little edge, but you never know in the world of boxing. Rigondeaux, I mean, he hasn't lost. So, I mean, there's some checks and balances. I'm going to go the opposite way and say Rigondeaux.
Okay, so then we're going to start with you. We got Danny Garcia and Zab Judah. Brooklyn against Philadelphia, New York, Philly. Who are you picking that one, Cincinnati C, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411? Zab Judah or Danny Garcia?
If Zab Judah has trained and he's at his best, give it to Zab Judah. You just don't know which Zab is going to show up. So that's up in the air.
Down low or top of the key? Are you shooting the J with Zab or are you going to dunk with Garcia?
Yeah, I gotta go with Brownsville. You know that.
Forgive me. I shouldn't have asked. I'm sorry, Hoopster.
Yeah, that's the wrong question to ask. You should have asked me.
Go ahead.
Brownsville, you know,
Brownsville. Hoopster, you got Brownsville. Okay, back-to-back Zab. Harold Weston Jr., Zab Judah, or Danny Garcia?
That's a hard fight. I mean, it depends on what Zab Judah comes to the ring. I mean, you know, he can do it, but... That's a hard fight to pick. That's a real pick-up fight. That really is.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. If Zab Judah is 100% and he's on, he can take Danny Garcia, it'll be a great fight. But
if he comes in, you know,
same old Zab,
no mind into the fight, then he's going to get beat. But it's a good fight. It's a good fight. If I'm going to take it out, I would go with Garcia. But I like Jab Judah. But I like Jab Judah in the fight. I really do. But I just don't know which one is going to come to the ring. That's the problem.
And then, here he is, Cisco. Who you like? Is it Zab Judah from Brooklyn or Danny Garcia from B-Hop Land in Philly?
I'm going to say this, man. Garcia is going to punish Zab Judah, man. I mean, yeah, let me tell you something. If you look at Zab Judah, man, Zab Judah, when he gets pressured, you know, you saw it against Floyd Mayweather, right? He got pressured against Floyd, and Floyd started beating the crap out of him. What did he do? He punched him in his balls. When he fought Lucas Matisse, right? Lucas Matisse dropped him, right? What he did, he almost ran out the ring. When he fought Claudi put a lot of pressure on him, started breaking him down. What happened? He quit over a headbutt. You know what I mean? And what happened with Amir Khan? Amir Khan clipped him, and what happened? He acted like he got hit low, and he quit in that fight, too. And he's going to quit in this fight, too, man. He's going to get it. I think Garcia is not, very skilled. You know, nothing special about him. But if you look at him, he beat Amir Khan, who beat Zab Judah. And not only beat him, but knocked him out. So I think that Zab talks a good talk, and now we're looking for, just like we were waiting for the old Mike Tyson to resurface, we're waiting for the old Zab Judah resurface. It ain't going to happen, man. That kid stop punishing him, bro. You're going to see a whole different Zab Judah.
Well, he's saying, ladies and gentlemen, he's saying that weight broke the wagon, and it will also, Danny Garcia, who will be holding the wagon, will beat Zab Judah. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. We're about to close it up here. The gang's been here. The Cisco Kid, Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., The Hoopster, Cincinnati C, a.k.a. Mr. NFL 411, Larry Hartsey has something to say for us, and then Marvin Gaye is going to come this way. Three thoughts. Live your life today. Life's most persistent urgent question is, what are you doing for the service to others? Please save your space. I can be safe by my heart. God bless you all, and trust in God. Larry, stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow. Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Are they gonna suffer tomorrow?
Really suffer tomorrow. What a shame.
Such a bad way to live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Let's live, everybody.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Thank you.
Would say it. The Sports and Nation, Sports and Depth Nation has been here. I'm Doc Stanley. I'm here. The Pimp, the Cisco Kid, the Hoopster, Cincinnati C, 411, Harold Weston Jr. They were here. And we'll be here again next week at 11 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network on Sports and Depth. Blog Talk Radio. Join us next Sunday. 11 p.m. right here, Blog Talk Radio, Sports and Depth, Justin Guard Radio Network. God bless you.